Chapter 33, Working Under Great Difficulties. Among the Jews it was regarded as sin to allow youth to grow up in ignorance of physical labor. Every youth, whether his parents were rich or poor, was taught some trade. Paul had early learned the trade of tent making. Before he became a disciple of Christ, he occupied a high position and was not dependent on manual labor for support. But afterward, when he had used all his means in furthering the cause of Christ, he resorted at times to his trade to gain a livelihood. At Thessalonica, Paul worked with his hands in self-supporting labor while preaching the word. Writing to the believers there, he reminded them, "You remember our labor and toil, brethren, we worked night and day, that we might not burden any of you, while we preached to you the gospel of God." RSV. And again, he declared that we did not eat anyone's bread without paying. "We worked night and day," he wrote, "that we might not burden any of you. It was not because we have not that right, but to give you in our conduct an example to imitate." RSV. At Thessalonica, Paul had met those who refused to work with their hands. "We hear that some of you are living in idleness, mere busybodies, not doing any work. Now such persons we command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work in quietness and to earn their own living. Even when we were with you," he wrote, "we gave you this command: if any one will not work, let him not eat." Verses 11, 12, 10, RSV. In every age Satan has sought to introduce fanaticism into the church. Thus it was in Paul's day, and later, during the Reformation. Wycliffe, Luther, and many others encountered overzealous, unbalanced, and unsanctified minds. Misguided souls have taught that it is a sin to work, that Christians should devote their lives wholly to spiritual things. The teaching and example of Paul rebuke such extreme views. Paul was not wholly dependent on the labor of his hands while at Thessalonica. He wrote to the Philippian believers in acknowledgement of the gifts he had received from them, saying, "Even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity." Notwithstanding the fact that he received this help, he set an example of diligence, that those who held fanatical views regarding manual labor might be given a practical rebuke. The Greeks were keen traders, trained in sharp business practices. They had come to believe that to make money, whether by fair means or foul, was commendable. Paul would give them no occasion for saying that he preached the gospel to enrich himself. He was willing to forego support from his Corinthian hearers lest his usefulness as a minister be injured by unjust suspicion that he was preaching for gain. Priscilla and Aquila encourage Paul. At Corinth, Paul found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy, with his wife Priscilla. These were of the same craft with himself. Aquila and Priscilla had established a business as manufacturers of tents. Learning that they feared God and were seeking to avoid the contaminating influences with which they were surrounded, he abode with them, and wrought, and he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath, and persuaded the Jews and the Greeks. In his second letter to the believers in Corinth, Paul reviewed his manner of life among them. "And when I was with you and was in want, I did not burden anyone, for my needs were supplied by the brethren who came from Macedonia. So I refrained and will refrain from burdening you in any way." RSV. While he had worked at tent making, Paul had also faithfully proclaimed the gospel. He declares of his labors, "For in what were you less favored than the rest of the churches, except that I myself did not burden you? Forgive me for this wrong. Here for the third time I am ready to come to you. And I will not be a burden, for I seek not what is yours but you. I will most gladly spend and be spent for your souls." During his ministry in Ephesus, Paul again worked at his trade. As in Corinth, the apostle was cheered by the presence of Aquila and Priscilla, who had accompanied him to Asia at the close of his second missionary journey. Some objected to Paul's toiling with his hands, declaring that it was inconsistent with the work of a gospel minister. Why should Paul thus connect mechanical work with the preaching of the word? Why should he spend in making tents time that could be put to better account? But Paul did not regard as lost the time thus spent. His mind was ever reaching out for spiritual knowledge. He gave his fellow workers instruction in spiritual things, and he also set an example of industry. He was a quick, skillful worker, diligent in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. At his trade, the apostle had access to people he could not otherwise have reached. He showed that skill in common arts is a gift from God, who provides both the gift and the wisdom to use it aright. Paul's toil-hardened hands detracted nothing from the force of his appeals as a Christian minister. Paul sometimes worked night and day, not only for his own support, but that he might assist his fellow laborers. He even suffered hunger at times, that he might relieve the necessities of others. His was an unselfish life. On the occasion of his farewell talk to the elders at Ephesus, he could lift up his toil-worn hands and say, "I have coveted no man's silver, or gold, or apparel. Yea, ye yourselves know, that these hands have ministered unto my necessities, and to them that were with me. I have showed you all things, how that so laboring ye ought to support the weak, and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" A suggestion for modern gospel ministers. If ministers feel they are suffering hardship, let them in imagination visit Paul's workshop. Let them bear in mind that while this man of God is fashioning the canvas, he is working for bread which he has justly earned by his labors as an apostle. Work is a blessing, not a curse. Indolence grieves the Spirit of God. A stagnant pool is offensive, but a pure, flowing stream spreads health and gladness over the land. Paul desired to teach young ministers that by exercising their muscles and sinews, they would become strong to endure the toils and privations that awaited them. His own teachings would lack vitality and force if he did not exercise. Thousands of human beings exist only to consume the benefits which God bestows on them. They forget they are to be producers as well as consumers. Young men who are chosen of God for the ministry will give proof of their high calling. They will endeavor to gain an experience that will fit them to plan, organize, and execute. They will, by self-discipline, become more and more like their master, revealing his goodness, love, and truth. Not all who feel called to preach should throw themselves and their families at once on the church for financial support. The means dedicated to the work of God should not be consumed by men who desire to preach only that they may receive support. Although an eloquent speaker and chosen by God to do a special work, Paul was never above labor, nor did he ever weary of sacrificing for the cause he loved. To the present hour, he wrote to the Corinthians, "We hunger and thirst, we are ill-clad and buffeted and homeless, and we labor, working with our own hands." RSV. He labored at this trade, nevertheless he ever held himself ready to lay aside his secular work in order to oppose the enemies of the gospel or to win souls to Jesus. His zeal and industry are a rebuke to indolence and desire for ease. Paul illustrated what might be done by consecrated laymen in many places. Many can advance the cause of God, while at the same time they support themselves in daily labor. Aquila and Priscilla were used by God to show Apollos the way of truth more perfectly. While some with special talents are chosen to devote all their energies to the work of the gospel, many others are called to an important part in soul saving. There is a large field open before the self-supporting gospel worker. Many may gain valuable experiences in ministry while toiling a portion of the time at manual labor. By this method, strong workers may be developed for important service in needy fields. The heart burden carried by servants of Christ. The self-sacrificing servant of God does not measure his work by hours. His wages do not influence him in his labor. From heaven he received his commission, and to heaven he looks for his recompense. Such workers should be freed from unnecessary anxiety. While they should be careful to exercise to keep mind and body vigorous, yet they should not be compelled to spend a large part of their time at secular employment. These faithful workers are not exempt from temptation. When burdened with anxiety because of a failure of the church to give them proper financial support, some are fiercely beset by the tempter. They become depressed. Their families must have food and clothing. If they could feel released from their divine commission, they would willingly labor with their hands. But they realize that their time belongs to God, and they continue to advance the cause that is dearer to them than life itself. They may, however, be forced to engage for a time in manual labor while carrying forward the ministerial work. At times it seems impossible to do the work necessary to be done because of the lack of means. Some fear that they cannot do all that they feel it their duty to do. But if they advance in faith, prosperity will attend their efforts. He who has bidden his followers go into all the world will sustain every laborer who seeks to proclaim his message. In the upbuilding of his work, the Lord sometimes tries the confidence of his people by bringing about circumstances which compel them to move forward in faith. Often he bids them advance when their feet seem to be touching the waters of Jordan. See, at such times, when prayers ascend to him in earnest faith, God opens the way before them and brings them out into a large place. Angels will prepare the way before them, and the means necessary for the work will be provided. Those who are enlightened will give freely to support the work. The Spirit of God will move on their hearts to sustain the Lord's cause, not only in home fields, but in the regions beyond. Thus the work of the Lord will advance in His own appointed way.